Welcome to the Speak As Well As You Think podcast, brought to you by Vautier Communications. I'm your host, Jen Alex, and the goal of this show is to uncover communication strategies and behaviors that you can use to improve the way that you show up and perform at work. We'll talk about what effective communication looks like in action so that you can apply it to your own career. If you'd like a written summary of each episode, subscribe to our weekly email newsletter by visiting vautiercommunications.com. Welcome back to another Speak As Well As You Think podcast. This month, we are here to talk about what we call forms of influence or different pieces of evidence that can support the message you might be sharing. So first thing I want to do is just lay out what we mean by forms of influence, what those look and sound like.
Jen, I'll grab it from there. The first thing that I want to say is really what a form of influence is, because a lot of what the viewers and listeners have heard us talking about in the months or years prior is the skills portion of what we talk about when we get in there and we're at the front of that room and we're that presenter. At the end of the day, we still need to be knowledgeable. All of us refer to ourselves as what we call subject matter experts. And the big thing in being an expert is you need to bring fact with you. There's a lot of different things that this fact can look like. There's a lot of different ways that you can portray this within the slides. But if we don't lead with whether it be data or a form of story or something of that nature, likelihood is our overarching message is going to fall through the cracks and it's going to seem like we're sharing opinion or advice. The big thing for us, again, is we're looking to have the effective and efficient communication to get our message across. And if our audience doesn't think we even know our message, then that's going to be our first issue out of the gate.
Yep.
Yeah. And even taking that one step further, Matt, I believe it's understanding who the audience is and then gauging what evidence sources make the most sense to them.
Right.
So as we think about the various uses of evidence, right, we've talked about data, we've talked about facts, statistics, examples, experiences, stories, some opinions, of course, then we've got subject matter expertise, like you mentioned, but it wouldn't be necessarily using all of these every single time we communicate. It's being strategic and picking and choosing which ones would have the greatest effect on the audience based on, one, who that audience is, and two, what the message is about. But for those of you who have listened alongside of us for the last several years, we've talked in great deal about the content is only as impactful as the skills you use to deliver it. But still a critical point there is content. And we can't dismiss the content. You can't just go in with saying, okay, I'm all skilled up, but I have no evidence. I have no material. I have no pieces of influence that would be able to help an audience aid in credibility, trust you, believe you, understand that you've got some knowledge base around this. All those things still depend on message.
Yeah, John. And to your point there, a big piece of it is often not that we don't know what the forms of influence are or that we don't have that information, because again, I trust that all of our viewers or listeners have the wherewithal in their roles or their responsibilities to know that information. But sometimes it's more, like you said, putting your finger on what it is for the audience at hand. Who's sitting in front of me? What are they going to react with? What are they going to follow up with? And again, how is this going to push that needle a little bit further to the point where, okay, we've got some belief and now we're on that same side of the coin?
Yeah, we want that trust and credibility. And to John's point, we can't just be good performers. That's helpful if people like listening and watching us, but that only carries us so far until somebody says, yeah, Jen's great to look at and listen to, but she has no idea what she's talking about, or she's really not bringing anything to the table that we don't already know. So it's being able to have both sides of that communication spectrum. And then Matt, to your point, or both of you, I think brought it up, but it's basically catering it to your audience, talking to them in the language that they use, because that's what's going to help us reach the end goal faster and ideally more clearly than if I just use what I prefer, even if that might not be the method that they learn best by.
Yeah. And I like what you said there, Jen, about bringing information to the table that the audience might already know. To go one level deeper, Some great evidence is a perspective on information that people already know. It's a different perspective. It's a unique look. It's based on my experiences or based on the research that I've done within this space. Here's how I feel about whatever it is that I'm sharing. But just because people might say, John, I've heard that before. Jen, I know that already. Matt, you've stated that, or we've known that for years. It is about understanding varying perspectives and then realizing, okay, what I thought I once knew, still true today, but now I have a different perspective, or I might know something a little bit more unique about what I thought I once knew.
Yeah, and actually I love that piece that you just shared because it's actually something I just talked about with a group a couple weeks ago around nervousness. And one of them said, "These are all things I've read up on, I've done research on in the past, but just the way you framed that was so eye-opening." And that's sometimes those are the things that you're looking for. It's not that it's this brand new, groundbreaking information that somebody's heard, but the way that you framed it, or perhaps, I don't want to say the spin, but for lack of a better word, the spin that you put on it resonates with somebody differently that really can create such a huge impact. So don't only think of forms of influence or evidence pieces as things that are brand new, wildly astonishing. They can fall into that category, but it can just be the way that you understood something or the way that something was explained to you that really helped in your understanding or movement forward in a specific area.
Yeah, and that's a big piece is people feel comfortable in the know. When people feel as though they're already on the inside, they're not learning something completely new to them, something completely foreign, typically there's a better chance of them buying in or of them trying to see eye to eye with us. When we start throwing darts at that dartboard and saying, hey, here's a bunch of complex, random topics that you may have never heard before, their likelihood to keep listening and keep listening doesn't necessarily go up. So yeah, it has to do with that humanity aspect and that personability aspect. And going one step further, I guess that leads to the question of what do these forms of influence actually look like? Because with those groups of individuals, we have plenty of different types that are looking for plenty of different things. I'll ask, even though I'm sure I have a little bit of information around it, in your experience and through teaching, what's the best way to figure out who wants what and what those groups are interested in?
My biggest recommendation is to see if you can do some research about the group ahead of time, whether it's asking somebody else that's spoken with them before or worked with that team or group or client. But I really think it falls into two main categories: storytelling cultures and data cultures. And there's different nuances underneath each of those, but a storytelling culture, they might talk more in examples. They give anecdotes. Maybe they provide some type of an analogy, but they work with situations, people, stories more often. Our data cultures learn best by hearing raw data. So charts, graphs, numbers, percentages, statistics. They tend to talk more in numbers. So as you're starting to either find out about a group or perhaps in the moment you're trying to learn their style, listen for do they tend to talk more in numbers or do they tend to talk more in examples and stories? And that can start to point you a little bit in the direction of which side you might want to lean heavier on. It's not that you only have to use that route, but there's flexibility for you to go a little bit deeper or more often onto that side. John, would you add
Yeah.
anything different?
I would just emphasize the and not or approach.
Yeah.
So it's storytelling and data instead of am I going in with stories today or am I just going in with data? Because I think if people decide I'm only going to go in with one, the reality is in today's world, in today's business culture and population, more and more audiences are interacting with both. And people will say, yes, it's helpful to see the statistics, or I like to see that graph or chart, but bring it to life. And when I use that phrase, bring it to life, it's use an example, make it into an experience. Tell me something that you have lived through before that you've seen. Maybe it's with another account, another client, another type of scenario where you say, think about it like this. And using that type of phrasing allows people to paint those pictures in their minds and say, okay, now taking that you just shared and introducing it into my world makes all the sense in the world. But it's making sure people understand it is a blended approach. And there's still certainly times where you might say, hey, I'm going to encourage the use of more data heavy, but I'm going to put it back in the appendix. I'll let this audience read it because generally that's how people consume data better anyways, is being able to put eyes on it and then they help make sense of it that way. Where when you're talking them through material or you've got them on the phone, virtually, in person, sharing more of that story where you've given some background, you provided some level of action, then as a result of that, you're sharing with them what's to come or what's next. But those things tend to resonate more and be what I consider more memorable for the listeners than something that's just another statistic or a fact tossed up on a slide that doesn't really go anywhere. It doesn't really come to life.
And I think that's a massive piece to touch on too, John, is when we say stories, we don't necessarily mean a 25-minute recount of something that happened to me or a place I've been or something I've done with my family. That's not necessarily what story means in this aspect. For us, story just means harping on something that somebody knows in more of the experience format, where we're not giving them statistics, numbers, graphs, charts, but more like you say, we're harping on, hey, I know that you've been in a similar situation, or your workflow deals with similar results, or you can understand the efficiency of the situation that we're talking through. Too often, people go into situations and they think, I want to drop in a story, and it turns into that 20-minute rambling at the beginning of that meeting that we just never get back on topic from. There's a time and a place for it, depending on, like you say, the audience, depending on what it is that you're looking to do. But also, you can scale the formality of that up and down. We see it done time and time again where people will come in and maybe they'll give a business anecdote in a work group that's a little bit lower in formality, maybe a life story. But we also see longer term business plans put out as stories or pitches put out as stories when people walk into these business meetings. And again, maybe it's only 2 or 3 minutes, but it's a good way to get that audience listening, thinking, and related to that topic you're speaking about.
Yeah, a fun activity. I'll challenge any of the listeners tuning in today. We in our storytelling workshops, we have a 30, 3, and 30 concept. So it basically talks about, can you share a story that would be 30 minutes in length, give or take? Can you take that same story and pare it down to 3 minutes, focusing more on concise, need to know, not nice to know? Then can you take that same story and take it down to 30 seconds? And very concise, incredibly high level. Think elevator pitch. You're, going up the floors on an elevator, and someone says, "Tell me your story," and you've got the ability to do that. But it's a fun challenge to be able to say more isn't always better. And that's, I think, excuse me, that Matt highlighted a moment ago was figuring out I don't necessarily need a long story in order to make it effective. If it is long because there's value add for the audience, then I'm okay with that. That's a decent litmus test. But otherwise, let me be impactful. Let me share characteristics around a location, some type of event that takes place. Maybe you've got some characters that will be helpful for an audience to understand or resonate with. But the whole idea behind storytelling is to connect on a human level. And that's part of why humans like stories, because so many people can say, yes, they're so relatable to almost every world that people operate in.
And it also helps us connect with the emotional side of things. And if we think about any of the research or psychology around decision making, we make decisions both on a logical standpoint, the information that's presented to us, but also around how something feels. I'm sure everybody's been in an experience before where you're in a car lot looking for a new car, and you know that all the safety features are exactly what you want. It's in the price point that you want. It's the color that you want. It has all the bells and whistles, everything that you need, but for some reason, it doesn't feel right. And you can't pull the trigger, even though all of the information, the logic in front of you is there and it seems like it's the right decision. Something's holding you back. You can't quite pinpoint it or put your finger on it, but it prevents you from making that decision. And the same thing happens when it comes to a business setting. Sometimes you have all the logical information in front of you on paper. It seems like a good choice and the right direction to go, but for some reason, something's holding you back emotionally. You just say, this doesn't feel like the right thing to do. And sometimes that's enough for people to walk away from a sale or a relationship or the decision that's on the table. So stories can also help us connect and bring in that emotional level and get that emotional buy-in to then follow it up with some of the logistics and the data side can be really helpful and impactful.
Looking at that data side, I guess, as we turn over to it, and Little disclaimer again, we are not data fanatics. We're not data analysts, but we know what people enjoy hearing and kind of how to piece those things together. Tips and tricks for the data side of it, because I know that there's people out there listening saying, I know that some of my listeners may love the data, but I'm the one that can't deal with putting that into words or putting that into a chart or whatever it may look like. Tips and tricks from you all on that data side of, again, one, how to make sure it's not too heavy, but also two, how to make sure it's kind of easy to understand.
Yeah, I would say first, make the data readable. Biggest thing I see with people who use data or try to incorporate it into slides, into visuals, on paper, if it's more of something that's written, it's just too small. And if something is too small and an audience can't see it, it's really tough to make sense of it. So I think readability and just the visual nature of it. I also think if you're going to use data, try to incorporate graphs and charts where people can see differences, whether it's a line, a pie chart, a bar graph, something where people can make some of the connections in terms of, okay, what are we comparing? But taking that again one step further, share the point behind the data. Data is great if you're explaining things, but if you don't help the audience understand what is the data telling me, then it's just a graph for the sake of being a graph, where you've checked the box to say, yes, I incorporated a pie chart, but your audience is going to look at it and say, John, that's nice. What does it mean? Tell it to me in my world, or help me understand what exactly this data is supposed to be pushing me towards, or helping me understand better, or helping me make a decision. But those are, I would say, two low-hanging fruits. Make it readable, and then make sure you share what that data's purpose is or what it means.
And I think one of the big pieces there is it's a sentiment that I pass along to a lot of my groups very often is although it might have taken us a long time to get all of those data points and be able to put that chart or that graph or that item together, it doesn't mean everybody wants or needs to hear everything. Again, we hear that far too often where we walk into a 60-minute meeting that could have been 30 minutes, and 25 of it is around explaining data points in one chart. Realistically, we only need a 30-second rundown of what it is this is trying to tell us, and we can move on our way. Both for the data lovers and the data haters, that's something that's going to go a much longer way than sitting there and trying to make them digest every single number that we got.
Agreed. And from both of you, two different perspectives or approaches on my side. One, Matt, coming right off of yours, first thing you should do when you put up any type of chart or graph, tell your audience what they're looking at. Don't make them figure it out. If I put it up there on my presentation, on my meeting, I should be the one to tell you all as an audience what it is you're looking at. So start with the, if you will, title. Give a high-level overview of both of your XY-axis, if it's some type of a graph or a chart that you're looking at that way. And then the key or what we're looking at. It's the easiest way to level set what's in front of us as we're starting to view it. And then John mentioned earlier, then land what the main point is, the key takeaway. Then you can add some of those details on how we got here, why this is important, whatever it is. On the simplify, I'm sorry, John said readability side. And I'll take that one step further and talk about simplifying. This is a really common sense thing. Yet it's one thing that some of us might miss here and there. I'm guilty of it just as much. Let's say across one axis, you have months. Put the first three letters of the month. You don't have to spell the entire month out. Let's say you have a date range, but they're all dates within 2025. You're looking at September and October of 2025. Rather than having each of those lines say, September 1st, 2025, September 15th, 2025, and so on and so forth, all you have to put is SEP. One, and then 2025 can be across the bottom. So there's ways that we can take some of the information that we're looking at and simplify it so that it does make it more readable. We can make it larger and it's simpler overall for people to glance up at and understand what they're seeing in addition to what you just told them they're seeing.
And in addition to that, you both sort of touched on it, but the only things on that graph don't need to be the data points. We can show arrows or boxes or circle things that we're talking about to make it more readily apparent to those in the audience. Oftentimes we sit in a meeting and we say, one, maybe it's too small to see, but two, maybe we've just been talking about it for enough time that I'm lost as to where we've now gone. It's a little bit easier when you walk me through not only what it is we're looking at, but where it is we're trying to pay attention to, than having me as an audience member try to fend for myself throughout that entire chart, graph, or presentation, which again, we see in those one slide, 20 to 30 minute graphics at times. My second question becomes, on that readability aspect, do you think that there's a large benefit to having it so that your graphs or your data stay on a separate chart from what you want to say with your words? Where, again, oftentimes we see there's one quadrant that has that small graph or that small table with words surrounding it on that slide. What are your opinions there?
Yeah, I think again, it's knowing your audience. I think I'll use this example. I worked with a group last week. They deal with quite a bit of data, but a lot of their content has to be shared. And I say has to, that's just culturally. They provide it either hard copy or they provide it ahead of time electronically so that that audience can get eyes on it, take a look at it, read through it, glance at it, pull some questions around it. In those cases, you might have two versions of content. One version is the one that's going to get shared, whether it's electronically or hard copy, perhaps a bit more dense. Perhaps those slides are busier with content because the expectation is that it's read. Second version is the one that's going to be discussed, presented, shared, communicated around. But this is the one that's going to have a little bit more conversation. And with that in mind, maybe the graph is larger and there's not as much text on it because you're the talk track. You're the one providing the content, providing the message, providing the why behind the data, but you're doing that real, or excuse me, in real time, whether that's virtually or in person. But I think leaning on both of those can be helpful. Again, I truly believe you tie it back to knowing your audience and what their expectations are, or you may understand ahead of time, I know their preferences. I know their attitudes towards really busy slides, and it tends to turn them off.
Right.
For obvious reasons, we don't want to do things that we've already done research on if we say this isn't a good outcome for the audience.
There's also options within, let's say, PowerPoint. There's morph options. There are different additions you can do that let you see the whole picture. And then, Matt, to your point, if we really want to zero in on an area, it could be using a function like morph. If you're not comfortable or don't know how to do that, it could just be taking a screenshot and zooming in on it. And then the next slide, you're very focused on just that portion of the graph. And then maybe that slide has a couple of bullet points or content pieces that are actually written out in some form for the audience to be able to not only see it, but also see the and hear the content that you have to share around it. And then it could perhaps go back to the large scale view of that data piece. And then you zone in on a different area, and whether you again use the morph or just take that closer screenshot. But you have some different options based on how you need to go through it and what you think your audience needs to take away. I can build it a certain way that might compensate for both of those two sides that John just talked about, because some organizations, they do have printouts and full presentations for everybody upon arriving, and others, they haven't printed a PowerPoint deck in 15 years. So, based on whatever that culture is, if your culture is not printing things or sending it ahead of time, I might build that movement into my meeting so that I can pace where I want my audience to go and what I want them to focus on while still getting that large view of all of the data and then narrowing in on the areas that I think are important for them to understand. So, there's different techniques that you can apply. Again, based on your audience, based on your culture, based on what the key takeaway or point you're trying to make is.
Great points. And I think the big piece of it all being is this is really how we hammer home that we're the right person for the job, or what we're asking for is that correct ask. You've heard it from us numerous times that how we look and sound is oftentimes how we're going to be perceived by those audience members. Albert Mehrabian, the UCLA pie chart, again, it's been touched on, but that 93% being what we see and what we hear is very important. And we don't necessarily focus on that 7%, the words, quite as much. As you get deeper into these talks, as you get further into more engagements with these individuals, we have to remember we're no longer making a first impression. We're trying to maintain that impression, which overall means we have to maintain our knowledge and that growth in what it is that we're trying to talk through. If we don't do our due diligence of one, making sure that our audience understands and cares about that information, but also two, that we have that information in our bags, Odds are the 93% of us looking and sounding good is going to turn into this person is really just faking it. We need to have those forms of influence so that that 93% can drive home the rest of that information we're talking through.
Yeah, great point. And I think it's really important to remember it's a both. It's not an either or, just like John said, with thinking about storytelling or data examples that you might use. It's bringing both of those in, perhaps leaning slightly heavier on one side over the other based on your audience and what they need. But you also have to have that balance of skill set, being effective with physical and vocal skills, and yet also having content knowledge and expertise that you're bringing to the table. So again, as we think about it, when we talk about forms of influence, those are things like storytelling, any type of data, whether it be statistics or facts. You could be sharing a testimonial, a quote of some sort, a case study, or something from a research paper, but it's anything that helps support the point you are trying to make. And the goal is to help other people see things the way you do or believe what you believe in order to move forward or get some type of an action. Consider bringing in different forms of influence based on the audience you're speaking to and what might connect with them the best. And then, if it's on the storytelling side, make sure they are short, concise, they have a main point and a key takeaway that relates and ties back to your message. On the data side, make sure that they're readable, simplify where you can. And then, also, same thing with our storytelling, make sure you understand the main point that you are trying to share. Thanks so much for joining us again this month. As always, if there's something else you would like to hear about, please respond to our newsletter when this podcast comes out, and we will get it in a future rotation. See you next month.
Thanks for listening to the Speak As Well As You Think podcast brought to you by Vautier Communications. Again, I am your host, Jen Alex. Vautier Communications is in the business of business communication skills. We coach and train both individuals and groups on how to elevate their presence and increase their impact through the way they communicate, present, and write. If you want to learn more about our in-person or virtual training options, visit our website at www.vautiercommunications.com. Thanks for listening.